We've got to New Year 1942.
That's right. Yes.
Did you know where you were going to be sent next?
No. We had heard vague rumors that they were going to fight in the Western Desert, but all we knew was that we had to make for Cairo. And it was about that time, though we didn't use it. You see, there was no railway between Syria and Palestine along the coast as there is now. It was the Australian forces that built it during the war. It's interesting, but it didn't happen at the time that we left Beirut. So there was no means of sending us on by train anywhere. We had to go in our convoys, in our cars and trucks. And finally we set off. I don't know whether I told you that, going back to when we went into Damascus, that we were in a bit of trouble ourselves, and this happened on more than one occasion, because the British couldn't understand what these women were doing so near the front. You see, their own nurses weren't. And they did put obstacles in our way. On more than one occasion, they countermanded Free French orders, and there was a bit of a row between them and the Free French, because they didn't see that we should be in such danger as we were supposed to be in. However, I think part of the delay for leaving Beirut was caused by that. You know, that they thought that we should stay put and not move on. But we did. And our convoy went to an unknown destination. Everybody knew that we were heading for Cairo, we were heading for Egypt. And it was a very pleasant journey part of the way until, as you can imagine, we got beyond Haifa and away into the Sinai Desert, which is a desert of sand dunes, more than... Well, the part we went through definitely was more sand dunes than the western desert that we were to see later on, which was rocks and escarpments and sand. But the part we went through was sand dunes, very fine, powdery sand. And it was bitterly cold. You hear how lovely and warm the desert is, but believe you me, it can be terribly cold. And we had to stop for the night somewhere. We found some corrugated huts, which were, I believe, had sacks of flour in them or something, which we turfed out and sort of sheltered there for the night and put our sleeping bags down. Came out looking more powdery than anything else. And we were bitterly cold. However, we picked up the convoy and off we went through the desert. There was a tarmac road, and you mustn't get off the tarmac road, because if the wheels come off the tarmac road, the whole thing could tip over, the whole truck or car can tip over. And we eventually arrived at Heliopolis. Yes. We arrived at Ismailia. And we did the ferry crossing. There was a ferry crossing at Ismailia. And we crossed through. And I have no recollection. Now let me think back. I think we must have spent a night at Ismailia. But I'm not quite sure whether we went to the nuns' hospital there and spent the night there, or whether the British were there, or how we spent the night, but we did. I think we did spend a night in Ismailia, and it was there that we held a sort of discussion on what we were going to wear, that it was obvious that we were going up to the Western Desert, and that when we got to Cairo, we must decide what we were going to wear, because we were warned that at that time of the year, the desert was absolutely bitterly cold at night. And wasn't much better during the day, but was certainly bitterly cold at night. And that if we were to be frontline surgical nurses, we could not rely even on our pale blue tobacco uniforms. or our pale grey costumes and cloaks and coats, but that we must wear something more serviceable. So Mrs. Spears decided that when she got to Cairo, she would make inquiries at the army clothing stores if we couldn't have battle dress and great coats. And the underwear which they wore in those days was long johns, which went right down to your ankles under their trousers, you see, and suede desert boots the men had. And it was decided that we would try and get all these. And they had a kind of scarf, which was double, which you pushed the end in far enough so as to put it well down on your head and wind the scarf round you, rather in the way of a balaclava helmet, I presume. And certainly we stayed at... We moved on, and at Heliopolis, or near Heliopolis, we stayed at an army military hospital, and they made us most welcome, and they put us up on beds in their billiard room, in the sisters' mess. They had a billiard room, which was right near the matron's quarters, and the first night we realized how the QAs managed to evade the strict rules of being in at a certain time at night, for they'd always been used to using the French window of the billiard room to come in. So we spent the entire night sort of figures creeping, we didn't know we were there, you see, creeping through in the dark, through the billiard room, and out the other end, very quietly, so as not to disturb matron whose door was very near. We had great fun with this. And of course, we realised that that was a good way for us to do it. We could go in and out of our billiard room at any time of the day or night without any bother. Anyway, the QAs made us most welcome and most hospitable, and a little bit jealous that they couldn't come up to the front with us again. A lot of them said that they would like to throw their commission, or whatever you called it, away and join us. Of course they couldn't do that, and they packed us up the day we had to leave. They packed us up no end of food and sandwiches and things to eat on the way. And meanwhile we had had trips into Cairo to be kitted up with men's battle dress, and we hadn't yet got to the stage, of course, of having their women in the army dressed in battle dress or anything like that, so there was nothing to fit women. But we got the smallest that the men could wear, and we had battle dress tops and trousers and long woolly long john things that were like combinations that went to your ankles, which were very necessary to the men in the war at that stage because of the cold of the desert. And we got the suede desert boots. It was the only way to walk through the desert sands. And these scarves for our heads. And I can't remember if we wore our own coats. I think we wore our own grey coats over it. And decided that if we got to any proper base hospital, we would fish out our tobrocco dresses and our nurses' veils. We wore the square veils that the QAs wear, I believe, to this day. But that... we would more than likely nurse in battle dress in the desert. So we got all our equipment together and all our kit and back into our long convoy again. And I think the first day we did over 300 miles, which was a lot in a convoy. And we found a ridge of desert, and we met some British... before that, we met some South African nursing sisters a little way into the desert. They were the first women to penetrate into the desert. And they had made a little nursing unit there. But their aim wasn't to go in as far as ours was. They hadn't yet thought of that, you see. Because the South African troops, as you know, were all volunteers. because officially South Africa was not at war. So they were all volunteers. And these nurses were volunteers. And they wore a very sensible uniform for the desert, not battle dress. They were very interested in us coming along in our funny, ill-fitting battle dresses. And then we went on, and we found a place in the desert which had rocks and sand and camel scrub blowing around all over the place. And we decided that we would pitch camp there, as on Halfea Pass, which was called Hellfire Pass, there was fighting going on, and the Free French were in the battle, I think, with the Australians, who were fighting together at that time, and some South Africans. Oh, no, it was the South Africans, that's right. They were taking Halfea Pass. And so we decided that if we camped that particular spot that we'd chosen, we'd be in a very good position to set up a mobile theatre and take in any wounded that were necessary. But in vain did they try and pitch the tents, because under the sand it was rock, and they could make no impression whatsoever. And then came a couple of, I don't know whether it was a British sergeant, excuse me, some British soldiers anyway, and they yelled at us to stop at once what we were doing, that we were in the middle of a minefield. So we gingerly came back out of the middle of a... First of all, the Free French got very stubborn and said, oh no, it was quite all right. They knew it was all right. There was no minefield there, but the British assured them that the Germans had left a minefield there in their retreat. And so we moved away to another spot and found softer sand and set up, I believe, one tent, ward tent, in which we immediately put up our folding beds and made up our beds with sheets and pillowcases and lanercel blankets, because it sounds very funny, but it had a great psychological effect on the wounded, as you can well imagine. Find themselves in proper beds. It was part of the cure. It was really a very wonderful idea of Mrs. Spears's. Whether it was entirely her idea or not, I don't know, but I think it was.
How well were you able to follow news of what was happening in the war, in Africa and in Europe?
We didn't. We heard rumours, and we were told they're fighting up there, and so we'd better set up camp here. And that was when we found that we set up camp in vain. Eventually, we did set up this camp, and we were about to put our mobile theatre together, which was two trucks. The floors let down into each other, and the ceilings let up, you know, over, so that made theatre and sterilising room. We had absolutely everything, but we hadn't yet... the trucks were side by side, but they hadn't yet been, the sterilizers hadn't yet been started, and they hadn't been opened into each other yet, because we didn't really know quite where we were. These British soldiers that had stopped us from parking in a minefield said that we were nowhere near the front, that by the time we'd set up camp, Hellfire Pass would be taken, which it was, we found. And the Free French were rather inclined to sort of try to run things themselves and not obey the British command orders. You know what I mean? It was rather tricky. And at times we were in danger because of that, because we were not protected enough. Mrs. Spears, soon after that, was always going back to Beirut for jobs with her husband and Madame Catou, and we were rather left at the mercy of the Free French, but that comes a bit later. But at this stage, we went on, we repacked all our equipment and decided that we would go to Tobruk. Some orders must have come from somewhere to go to Tobruk, but whether they came direct from the British or whether they came to us from the Free French only, we didn't know at the time, but all we knew was that we packed up and we were back in convoy again. We went through Sulum and all these places. And when we went through Sulum, which was, I presume, had been once a very nice Italian tourist village on the edge of the Mediterranean, the British were there, and they made us tea. Now, the Germans had salted all the wells along there, so when we got the tea, it was salt. Because the only thing one could do was to use the water. And after we left Sulum, I think before we went to Sulum, when we got to this camp that we made, we had the worst sandstorm that we had ever yet encountered. Of course, looking back on it, the terrible sandstorms that we had in the Western Desert in those days were chiefly caused by the tremendous movement of armored vehicles churning up the sand. But anyway, that we could see this whirlwind of sand getting nearer to us before the dusk fell. So we had just taken up camp, and we got into the lorries and shut the backs down and settled down for the night to try and avoid the storm. Some of us had managed to get, when we were in Palestine, some of the white veils the Arab women wore on their heads, and we draped them all round our faces during sandstorms, and that did keep the dust from getting up our nostrils so much, because it was terrible fine dust, and it really is awful. And then we heard some vehicles draw up in the night, and of course we didn't know whether they were enemy, whether they were friends, or what was going to happen. We heard a good English oath, and it was an army officer and some of his men asking if they could shelter with us from the sandstorm. And they we let them into our lorries and with the men and into the cars, you know, to get away from the sandstorm. And they spent the night with us, and we gave them breakfast, and then they departed their way and we departed our way. And as I say, we got to Sulum and had some nice salty tea, find that the wells had been salted as we got further up. And then we did many, many more miles until we got to the outskirts of Ensor, where we were taken for Tobruk, where we were taken for an Ensor troop. They could only think that anybody coming up that far must be Ensor, nothing else. You see, we were in battle dress and looking very dirty and dishevelled, and I should think we must have been a pretty awful sight, caked with sand, you see, from the sandstorms. And we explained what we were, and Mrs. Spears produced the various papers and documents that proved what we were, and the Free French doctors came forward, and so on. And we said that we were aiming for Tobruk. We spent the night on the outskirts, and Mrs. Spears, I think, sent ahead to say that we wanted to come into Tobruk, which absolutely horrified the town major, because the British were in Tobruk. That women should want to come into Tobruk, you know, right up at the front like that, and he wouldn't let us in, so we had to remain outside for another night. And then we just went on and into Tobruk, and said we just couldn't stay there. We just wouldn't allow it. But that there was a sort of beach hospital further out on one of the escarpments out into the sea, and we could go and pitch our tents there. But there were already tents pitched there. We might not need to pitch our own, as they were the less seriously wounded that were out there with some orderlies and a British surgeon. So we went off there, and we were greeted with rather reserve, and it didn't enter our heads until later as to why the orderlies that helped us make the beds and get things ready didn't speak to us. They were British, they were very reticent, very silent. And of course it wasn't till later that it dawned on us that it had been a long time since they'd seen women. They couldn't trust themselves. They just, you know, were absolutely overwhelmed with the fact that this band of women suddenly turned up and thrust itself on them in the middle of the desert. And we realised that we were doing them some harm in sort of turning up like this. You know, we were upsetting them. However, all that got sorted out and the British moved on, and we had very few British. We did have some with us. And the next day, some of the nurses went into to Brook to see what the hospital was like. And at that time, the hospital ships were still coming in to fetch the wounded and take them off to Egypt. So, of course, there were no wounded ever left. Well, Colonel Fruchot came along to the hospital, which was pitted with bullets, no windows left or anything like that. It was absolutely shell-struck all over. However, we set up hospital there, and Colonel Fruchot made an operating theatre, met up with the British, who were, he and the British, had several operating units at that one time, and they were operating like mad, you know, day and night, and then shipping them off to the hospital ship.
Were they still having soldiers from the front?
We were at the front. It was the fighting that was going on all around us. And the ACAC of Tobruk, well, after the ACAC of London, you would have thought that nothing could be worse than the ACAC in London, but the ACAC of Tobruk was famous for being absolutely terrible. And we at the Beach Hospital had these rows of ACAC guns going up and down along there, you see, to defend Tobruk, and firing over our heads. And the harbour was beginning to get filled up with wrecks. And the time came when the hospital ship made its last entry. It was no longer safe for a hospital ship to come in there, so that any wounded that we would have, or any sick that we would have, would be treated by us for as long as we could treat them, and then would have to be sent back by road through the desert, which was tricky, because Rommel's men were in every direction, and so were ours. You never knew, you know, what you were going to meet, and we were told that Rommel's men were watching us over the nearest escarpment at the Beach Hospital, and we weren't allowed to smoke at night, because a cigarette, the light of a cigarette, you know, goes very, very far indeed, and no one was allowed to smoke at night, not even inside the tents, because of the glow showing through the canvas of the tents. Apparently it could do so, they could pick it up. They knew jolly well we were there, watching us through binoculars, probably as the British were watching and the Free French were watching them. And when you went over to the Tobruk Hospital, we had the more minor cases at the Beach Hospital. We had a lot of British as well as French.
What about Germans?
And Australians. We didn't have so many German prisoners as we did in France, and they didn't treat us as they did in France. We had the odd one. I do remember one occasion hearing, this was later, when the QAs had got to Tobruk and had taken the hospital when we'd moved on. I do remember hearing that a QA saw the German wounded into a truck, and offered one of the very bad ones a mug of tea, a boiling hot tea, and he threw it into her face, and she was blinded. She remained blind. But we didn't have, I don't seem to remember, unless I've put it in the book, I can't remember that we had many Germans in Tobruk. We had the odd badly wounded one, but the British removed them almost immediately, because the British were there in charge, you see, and the Free French were under the British. Well, one day, after we'd been there a little while, somebody came and said we were to move on to a place called Tamimi, further up in the desert. So back into convoy again. Everything packed up and everything shipshape, mattresses being sterilised along the road as the little steriliser was going along. And we arrived at Tamimi that night, and we immediately pitched camp and made up the beds in one tented ward. And we had a way of identification to conform with the Geneva Convention. We had some sheets which were stitched together, very, very big flag it made, with some of them dyed red to form a red cross in the middle. And we opened this out and spread it in the desert, weighted it down with rocks and things, so that the planes would know that it was not a fighting unit, it was a surgical unit. And we found that we were fairly near a German surgical unit, which was operating quite near us, and had not yet either moved forward or moved back. But on our way there, we kept passing British convoys going in the opposite direction. And I remember, I think it was Barbara, one of our MT drivers, saying, I was in Mrs. Spears's car at that time, I believe, saying, muttering under her breath, looks more like a retreat than a victory to me, and we're going the wrong way, as usual. The Free French were going their own sweet way, and the British were all going back. It was definitely a retreat. Rommel was on his way forward. But off we went. And then the British came to us in the middle of the night. We nurses had decided that whilst it was quiet, we'd have a wash. It was very difficult to get a wash into Brook, because you had to decide whether you were going to drink, wash your hair, or wash your clothes, or what you were going to do with the limited amount of water that you had, and keep enough to drink as well as do the chores that, you know, were necessary. However, when we got to Tamimi, there seemed to be unlimited water, so we got into our tent and we stripped, and we're all having a darn good strip watch when when a British orderly put his head through the flap. We all yelled, and he said, well, you've got to get out of there, you can't stay, you've got to move, Rommel's on his way, you're right up where we want to set up a counter unit. You know, the army, British army, had earmarked Tamimi for a battle area, and the Free French had dumped us there. So we had to get dressed. We had no time to pack up any equipment. Fruchot was annoyed, but he said that he would see to it. And the British said that there was only one thing to do. We must get into our staff cars, and our MTC drivers must find their way back to Tobruk by compass, because the desert at night is very confusing. It's just, you know, you don't know where you are. And they used their compasses, and we travelled all night back from whence we had come. And we arrived at a spot at daybreak and decided to, that there were some tents or buildings not so far away, and so we would stop and have breakfast. And we discovered that this was a front line naffy, so we raided the back, and we got hold of all sorts of things that we hadn't been, because we'd been living in Tobruk. And all through our time in the Western Desert, I don't know whether I told you, we had been living on bully beef and what we called dog biscuits. Now, the old-fashioned dog biscuit was a big, thick, square, hard biscuit. And we swore that was what they gave us. And ascorbic acid tablets, you know, vitamin C. And what water we could get. And occasionally a unit would pass by that had been through some green belt or other and would bring us an orange. But that was our diet. We casseroled it, we ate it as it was out of the tin, we mashed it up, you know, it was still bully beef and dog biscuits.
Had you had any patients